What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. Really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show. We have a very special guest in studio today. He's a friend of mine. He has a credential list that is absurdly long, so I'm not going to go through all of it, but we will definitely touch on it here in the show. The great and powerful Matt Green. Welcome to the show.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Doing great, man.
I'm excited to have you on.
Yeah, man. This is I've been looking forward to this one for a while just because I think we have a lot of great things to talk about here. You have, like I said, you have a crazy list of credentials here. I mean, you're a St. Louis City police officer. You're a coach for effective fitness and training, or effective fitness training, an instructor for effective fitness combatives. You're a jiu-jitsu black belt, an IBJJF, Pan Am, and world champion, CrossFit Games semi-finalist, former collegiate All-American wrestler. I don't know what these other ones are. CSCS?
Yeah, CSCS, TSAC-F, just certifications for strength and conditioning coaches.
Got it. TSAC-F.
TSAC-F is specific strength and conditioning coach for first responders, essentially.
Okay. And then you have experience in engineering and analysis. You're a former Boeing F-18 analyst engineer, and you've got a bachelor in applied math, and you have a master's in mathematics?
Working on it
currently.
Wow.
Yeah. You got a lot going on. Mr. Captain America himself. So we're happy to have you here, man. Let's just get right into it. You got a video out there that, saying that police officers are not heroes. I watched the video and I just kind of want to, talk about that. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think what motivated me to make that video was just the current state in policing. And I think the perspective that both police officers and civilians have on it. I think how we from both those sides perceive police officers as important as it will ultimately determine how we act as a police officer. So specifically, usually you get the two sides. There's people that are indifferent, but right, the two largely opposing sides are going to be cops, fighting for cops. Like, hey, I'm a cop's cop. I'm out here doing God's work. I'm serving, sacrificing, serve and protect, right? It's seen as like a holy grail of things you could possibly do as a human, right? It's almost looked as a very righteous and moral above standard human thing to do. So I think that can be dangerous for police officers when you view yourself that way or allow others to change the way you think of yourself because of how they talk about you, whether good and or bad.
It makes sense. Get that superiority complex
Sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, I know there's probably we'll kind of go down a rabbit hole here, but what problems do you see with like training when it comes to police officers?
I would say regarding training, the biggest deficit you're going to see is a lack of use of force, hands-on training, specifically not incorporating proper and effective methodologies, that being grappling, right? Like obviously as police officers, there's things that are applicable that you would have to change regarding how you incorporate the grappling, that being Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, wrestling, judo, all those things have a place, right? But largely it's just not incorporating those at all at the department level, at the academy level, so in service as a current police officer, and then also at the academy level when you're trained to be a police officer. You don't see continual training If you do, it's 2 to 4 hours of continual training a year.
A year?
At most, we don't have any. So at the city department, no continual training for defensive tactics. I've been on 6 years total, and I think there was one class we did for an hour on of the 6 years for continual training.
Whoa. Oh, shit.
Dude. For combatives, and it was how to put handcuffs on and take them off.
Dude.
So it's wild, man.
That's nuts.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, like, would you say, like, the average blue belt in jiu-jitsu is, like, way more trained than the average cop?
Yeah, I mean, easily, because the average cop is just that, an average human. They're pulling from a demographic of people, you know, it's just a subset of the average population, which is the average person's untrained. So a blue belt being moderately trained 2 to 3 years on average to get a blue belt. Yeah. They're far superior to any cop that you're going to see, the vast majority of them.
Yeah. I remember watching a podcast on Jocko Willing's show, and he was like, it should be mandatory that police have jujitsu training. And he said that would be the, like, that was one of the things that he was saying, that if he became president, that he would implement.
Yeah, I think he has a great outlook regarding, like, police. If you want the way that police are looked at and how we, the society, want them to do the job, really they should be treated like operators in a sense. Operators, like being, you know, your teams guys, SEALs, Beret, et cetera, where they're constantly training. The majority of...
I think you said like 20% of the time they spend training or something.
Right, and I would even say easily that. Like if we're working 40-hour work weeks, easily 8 to 10 hours. That 20, I mean, 25% should be true.
You and I, I'm spending at least 8 hours in the gym.
Yes. Sure.
And I think, and I know you're probably spending more than that, but.
Yeah, I try. I think more than just making jiu-jitsu mandatory, this is like where effective fitness combatives, why I started working for them, is their methodology just got me hooked. It's wrestling jiu-jitsu based, which is my background, but also it's the way in which they're implementing it, right? So it's beyond just mandating jiu-jitsu and grappling. It's how you're using that within the realm, the domain of policing, right? Because there's certain things we can and cannot do, certain things you shouldn't do, and certain, you know, they're not necessarily, as you would imagine, not all things are applicable within jiu-jitsu, the sport of jiu-jitsu, or recreationally within law enforcement. So you have to kind of gear that specifically for law enforcement, right? Modify those things and account for things like, hey, I got a gun on my belt, I'm going to be operating on surfaces that aren't mats, right?
Sure.
Et cetera, et cetera. So that's a great thing, like with EFC, how we're, you know, Jay and them are doing a great job of modifying those techniques and pressure testing them in real life scenarios and, you know, modifying them to make them ideal for police.
So now EFC, let's go into kind of what exactly is that? Is that something that you kind of do on the side? If you're a police officer, this is like an additional training that you can kind of sign up for, or like how does all that work?
So EFC, I'm currently like an instructor form. I'm currently an instructor form. We have, you know, some guys that work. They're all active law enforcement, proud law enforcement. We go to seminars and we instruct other law enforcement officers. Ideally, it's like instructors. So it's the course is meant to instruct the instructor. So you're teaching people how to teach people.
Sure.
But we get guys that are just cops in the street that are just going for a refresher, or ideally a new methodology on how they can incorporate proper tactics in the street. But our goal target is going to be defensive tactics instructors throughout other departments and guys that want to be those, right? Or just a SME for the department that wants to better be able to implement proper protocol within the department or make changes, right? So we have a methodology that's post-certified in most states. The goal is to teach people on that methodology so they can go back and hopefully teach their academy recruits and in-service cops, but also adopt that curriculum at the academy level and service level so that you can, you know, we can reference that curriculum as our basis for what we teach, as opposed to just, you know, using whatever sort of PPCT, pressure point, bullshit, Aikido, you know, wrist locks that like St. Louis City has, you know, we're showing Steven Seagal wrist locks to subdue people and get hands behind their back, which is fucking wild.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine who's a St. Louis City police officer, and it was actually at a bachelor party, and I remember we were talking about, like, it's like, man, I have, you know, talking to me, because I mean, I'm the only one there that trains, and we was like, hey man, I have a really hard time, like, when the guy's like laying on his stomach, hiding his hands, I can't get his hands behind his back, and I, you know, just kind of, you know, he's like, what would you do to get someone's, you know, to get someone's hands free? And I was like, well, you get inside control, you know, get his elbows away from his body, you know, pulls, you know, get his wrist, you know, control his hands, get his hands behind his back. I mean, I was like, I don't know if that's right, but that's what I would do if I wanted to get someone's hands behind his back. And I was like, I was just like flabbergasted that he like didn't know how to do that as a police officer who'd been, you know, he's been a police officer for a number of years at the time. And I was like, man, like, that kind of really opened my eyes to like how much, how little training that police officers actually get when in combatives and just how to control a human body.
Not just that, but how in shape they are.
Yeah.
I've got some buddies that are police officers and I'm like, boys, how are you supposed to run somebody down?
Yeah. The combative thing is, you know, that's one thing. Cause it's like, okay, maybe you could, you know, blame it on the fact that your department doesn't offer training or you don't know that that training exists, right? That you're just unaware of what, or you just don't know what proper training is. Like if you don't, you've never fought, you've never been in an MMA fight, you've never grappled, you've never, then you don't necessarily know what's the most optimal way to control a human. You've never wrestled, right? You're not aware that those things exist, which is why you see these shitty methodologies within police, because, you know, guys that do Aikido, guys that are using these less than ideal methods aren't actually fighting humans. They're not pressure tested, which is why they're, you know, they go through life unaware of the deficiencies of their methodology. But with fitness, it's like, hey, man, you just do work.
Yeah.
You'll get fitter. Like, what? You don't have to really, like, yeah, there's ideal ways to do fitness, but it's like, just go run, bro. Like, you're not going to be setting a world record with a mile PR if you're just going out doing random shit, but you're going to be above average fit if you're just compiling work.
Yeah. That makes makes complete sense. I mean, like, so if you had to start, if you know, they said, hey, Matt, you're in charge of how police off, how we do training here. What's the first thing you would implement in the academy?
Oh, fuck.
Would you like say like, hey, you got to get a blue belt or you got to train X amount a year or like what would be?
If I'm in charge of who's getting hired or how they're being trained?
Both.
So I guess the first step, right, would be how we hire people. So looking at it from that perspective. I mean, realistically, if we're being realistic, we already have a shortage of police officers, right? So like, which is why we see the problems we do, right? Because the kinds of people they're hiring, it's not just the lack of training, but it's their inability to want to train and the kinds of people that are being drawn to policing, that's a whole nother argument, right? Like, okay, you could say it's money, blah, 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 blah. So assuming like an ideal world where, you know, getting a sufficient population of people to want to be police officers and, you know, money, all those things, all those variables aren't necessarily part of the equation. I would say the ideal person I want to hire is someone that they should have a foundation in training, but if they don't, like, I don't necessarily think it should be a requirement. I don't necessarily think that prior training should be a requirement, but if that's the case, then we need to implement a structure, a methodology within the academy where we're training people up to standard, which is not being done. So if a 6-month academy is pretty long, but like I didn't learn shit. Like you could have put me on the street before I did that academy and I would have known essentially, I mean, with some minor, you know, without the law, without, you know, the law classes, there'd have been no difference. Like I could have taken 1 week worth of law classes and That would have sufficed.
Really?
At least for me, right? Because I went in with a high level of training.
You have a high level. You're not the average human. That's
but,
for sure.
But to be honest, like, I mean, some of those guys lost weight and they gained some fitness. That's the only thing the academy, I would say, did for some people. But in terms of like actually being able to operate as a police officer, there was no, it wasn't sufficient and it just wasn't useful. So with that being said, I would say, I don't think you need a background in, like, I would ideally be looking for those people that have backgrounds in combatives related sports, right? Wrestling is number one, man. Sure, if they wrestled, course. I want you.
Get them to the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's still not sufficient, right? Wrestling in and of itself isn't sufficient. So it ultimately comes down to, I would hire people that have a level of intelligence and open-mindedness and willingness to train. So if you're a lazy piece of shit, I don't want you. If you're stupid, I don't want you. I mean, you can't change stupid and you can't change lazy in my mind. So those are the two things that I want. I want people that are willing to work hard and that are at least of average intelligence, because that's probably going to lead to people who are more open-minded and then willing to train and willing to do the things necessary to become a good police officer. Then that would take us to the academy level. How would I?
Yeah. What would be the first, you know, thing you'd change or implement if you could?
At the academy level, I would say, and there's a lot of things I would change regarding defensive tactics, which one I would not call defensive tactics. You know, this is a big thing EFC's on, which I agree with. It's like, it's combatives, man. Like we have to be in defensive tactics. It's in the name. It's pretty misleading, right? Like we want to give the impression that we're being defensive, that it's a counter offensive or defensive measure. But like sometimes as police officers, we want to be offensive.
Of course.
So one, I would change the name from defensive tactics to combatives or some sort of other.
Yeah, but I mean the public persona doesn't sound so good. I get it.
A lot of it's just public perception, man. The way that's also important because we need to start changing the way the public perceives things. So, and that starts with changing, like, just accepting that we have to be offensive. So with that being said, I would change defensive tactics to some type, to ideally EFC's methodology. That, I mean, I work for him for a reason, because I believe their methodology is the best. So I would incorporate a methodology where you are learning wrestling and jiu-jitsu, and that it's geared specifically for law enforcement in real life situations. I would probably mandate something like, I would have them train every day, man.
Really?
Every day they should be training.
That's how you start your day. You gotta go in and take a jiu-jitsu class or a wrestling class. That's the first thing you do. You shower up, then get out on the street.
Two hours of combatives every day, 5 days a week. I would mandate it for 6 months. That would be a solid base.
For sure.
And the people that didn't want to do it, guess what?
See ya.
They quit. Good. We don't want those people anyway. There's going to be the same people that quit on the street, that are liabilities, that probably are committing illegal things or using excessive force, right? Because they're either weak-minded people or they're scared, and they're you see the people where the cops freak out and they maybe do something they shouldn't have done, whether it be excessive force through firearm when they could have controlled that subject, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? We don't want those people. They quit. Good. We don't want those anyway. And then the ones that are capable grow into more efficient police officers, and they leave with a better understanding on how to police, specifically through use of force.
How many people right now that you're currently working with feel the same way as you?
Not many, man.
Really?
Not many. And that's evident because, I mean, I have gotten quite a few city coppers to start training. Like Revive has.
Yeah. I say they got the Adopt-A-Cop thing, right? Don't they?
We work with Adopt-A-Cop, yeah, but we had a couple guys on that program, but we have.
That's kind of funny.
10
jiu-jitsu, just bringing in adopting.
Well, it's the whole program. I think it like basically pays for their training up to blue belt or something.
Awesome. Yeah, up to blue belt gives. The idea is like, I think $100 is what Adopt-A-Cop gives. So ideally, that you're as an affiliate of Adopt-A-Cop, you pay for the remainder of that membership.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, we have like 10, 12 coppers at Revive, and I think Watson's over at in the city has some coppers. So
not a lot though.
No,
and I'm like shocked because I always remember the story that stuck out to me, and it really kind of opened my eyes to like how little training police officers get. I said the one story about my one buddy, but I remember when I was training at a different gym than Watson's, I remember there was a guy that came in. It was like his first day in jiu-jitsu, and I was talking to him before the class, and he was telling me how he's a SWAT guy. And I was like, oh damn, this guy's going to be tough. And then like, I was like a 6 month into training, and I was able to like throw him around, submit him several times. And, you know, and I was 6 months into training. I had 3 years of wrestling experience in high school. So, I mean, I wasn't brand new, but, you know, I was like, wow, I was able to like throw around the SWAT guy and, you know, sub him several times. And I was like, dude, that like really opened my eyes to how little training police officers have. Holy shit. Like this guy kind of like was like kind of trying to like flex on me and tell me how tough he was. Cause he was like part of the SWAT team. And I was like, oh, but then you kind of know quickly, like when you grab someone, like how much training they have, and you're like, okay, well, this is, you know, it really opened my eyes to it. So
you couldn't have said it better, man. The SWAT guys are just like, I mean, there's some great SWAT operators, but in terms of how they work within their realm of CQB and all that, okay, whatever. But with all that said, just like street policing, use of force, how to like control somebody, the vast majority of them are just the biggest bros of policing that became SWAT operators. And
really,
you know, just rely on size, mass, and or.
Yeah, this guy was way bigger than me too. And I'm not a big guy, you know, and I'm like, I'm buck six, you know, at the time I was probably buck 60, buck 65, 5'7", you know, and this guy was over 6 foot, you know, I don't know what he weighed, probably close to 200 plus. And I was able to, you know, throw him around, and I was like, holy shit.
They have an image to protect. So sometimes the SWAT guys, you know, it's just like, you know, you get a Green Beret or a SEAL, you get trained with some guy that has like high level military training, you know, they got an image to protect, man. They don't, because people see him as like superheroes, but it's like, hey, you guys are well-trained within the areas you're well-trained in. That doesn't mean you know how to fight or control a human. That's not how they're trained.
Oh yeah. I'm sure if we, you know, got out on a gun range, he would shoot way better than me, right, or whatever, you know, but like in a hand-to-hand situation, I felt pretty confident there.
Yep.
So, you know, and I'm not trying to like brag or anything, but I was like, holy shit, it's really.
It's the reality of the world. And that's what's more scarier is not only their delusion, but the delusion of the public thinking that these guys who are getting special military, special police training, that they're somehow more qualified to do the job. I mean, within a certain capacity, yes, but not when it comes to controlling a human. They're not getting specialized training on that. It's not happening.
So, you know, if you had to give it a percent, what percent of like the St. Louis City police officers like train?
I think I did this math a few months ago. I think it's less than 10, and we have, I mean, we're supposed to have like 1200 cops, but we probably have, I don't, who knows, 800. Dude, it's less. So what, less than a percent?
Dude,
it's about a percent or less of cops that train. I mean, it's fucking.
That's sad.
And what's crazier is that almost all those guys are buddies of mine. So they've trained as a result of my direct influence on them. So imagine if I wasn't there.
Yeah, there'd be even less.
I mean,
very little or even none. You know, like, holy shit.
That's me, you know, for the last 6 years down people's throats, like, literally fucking, you know, berating them. Like, you got to train, like, you know, them getting, some of them getting their asses. Like, I made a video, I'm sure you saw, where one of our coppers got his literal ass beat.
I watched it and I couldn't even, it was like, I was like, why?
Cringe,
like,
man.
Dude, it was so cringe. I was like, you're going to put him in, he like put him in like a crazy, like open guard, like closed guards. You know, it's like a closed guard with his legs just like on the floor, like on the ground. And I was like, lazy, oh my God, dude, like, what are you doing?
And even after events like
and
that,
he like tried to like jump on his back or something at some point and like got flipped over. I'm like, dude, oh my God.
Basic level fucking wrestling.
And the dude was
wrestling.
Like way smaller than him too. Yep. Like that was.
He had probably 75 pounds on him and half his age.
Yeah.
I mean, basic wrestling would have subdubed that human. Basic.
Oh yeah.
And elementary school.
On his knees the whole time. Like anytime they were on the ground, he's like, you know, in like the, almost like the referee position in wrestling, like just like trying to follow him around for a second. And I was like, well, you just knock him over. Like, what are you doing? Like, knock him over, get on top of him, pin him. Like, what do you?
And the crazy thing is, events like that, oftentimes, like, that guy still doesn't train even after that. And the guy was, I mean, he was, you, I don't know if you could tell the video, the suspect was pulling on his gun.
Yeah.
He punched him
like
twice in the dick and was pulling on his gun.
Yeah.
So it's like, if the boys hadn't shown up, bro.
Yeah. They showed up right in time.
He might
be
dead.
Oh yeah. And then they like tackled him off of him, and then, you know, he's got three guys on him then. But yeah. And like, crazy that that's not an opening, like, eye opening experience for you, that you, you know, you fucking, you could die any day out there. Like, you don't know who you're pulling over or what you're, who you're chasing down, what they have. Like, dude, it's like, your life isn't literally.
And you would think they would want it, just for that reason, they would want to train.
You think?
I think it's, you would think. I think the reasons that cause people not to train are different, right? Like, a lot of times you can blame it on, oh, we don't get time to train.
We don't have time, yeah.
We don't get paid to train. It's not department approved, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, dude, why are you doing, like, I understand the department should train, should pay us to train. It should be on duty. We should get to go to gyms. We should have department training at the department that's specific for law, et cetera, whatever. I get it. But we don't. That's not the world we live in. So do control what you can control, which is going and seeking your own training, especially from someone that's highly qualified who works with him, that being me, who has offered said training and still refuses it. It's like, you can't fix that, man. Your desire to live and be a good police officer has to extend beyond just what the department offers.
So with you being an EFC instructor, like, is there like a plan to like implement like some sort of instruction or like anything like that? Or is that kind of like the goal with becoming an instructor for EFC?
At the city level?
Is that kind of the hope to like become an instructor and be like, hey, can I start, you know, setting up classes, or like, how does that work?
I've actually worked on that. I've been working that the last like year, which is, as you would imagine,
pulling teeth,
a fucking nightmare. Yeah. It's dude, it makes me want to quit. It like is so frustrating. Just like, I don't want to be around people that are fucking this, either unwilling to adopt it or incapable of understanding how important it is. But yeah, I've been working with the academy on, you know, you got to get through all the red tape. They've been using the same curriculum for decades. The guy in charge is an Aikido follower. So it's like, it's just a matter of ego, man. Yeah. You know, it's like, you got to get past things and people that are just unwilling to change or incapable of changing. Yeah. Because it's like, that guy's he's never been in a fight, dude.
Right. It's like, dude, like, why don't they just like pair you guys up and be like, all right, let's see who can control who here.
Cause then, you know, the 6'1", 230 pound guy, oh, it's cause you're big or athletic. It's like,
no, it's cause I've fucking trained for 15 years.
I mean, you know, like, but that's
probably more than that. I mean,
the scapegoat will always be, oh, because you're fucking athletic, young, big, blah, 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 blah. So it's just, there's always something. You know how it is, man.
Now, but, are there other, like, is this just a St. Louis thing? Like, are there places around the country that actually implement this that are better than, like, that do this better than others? Like, is there anything like that?
There are. There are some notable departments that are seeking change, but largely shitty. So like Marietta PD actually came out with an analysis of jujitsu trained athletes officers versus non-jujitsu trained officers. I think it was like 2019. They conducted a 6-month, 1-month. It was a very short study. It's not a huge department, but they showed a significant like decrease. I don't have the numbers off my hand, but a significant decrease in use of force and injuries within, you know, those that are trained and those that aren't trained, man. And that's just a cop. And they define someone as being trained as someone who goes to one class a week.
That's it.
I'm like, yeah, that was it. That and they saw change.
Such a minimal. Yeah, I mean, that would be an improvement for sure. Right. Than what and it then, is. Like, one day a week is better than no days a week. That's still 52 sessions a year. Like, yep. That's, you're going to be a better, you know, at the end of that year, you're going to be better at handling a human body than, yep.
Or at least more comfortable
with it, and nothing else. And then like the part that, you know, you've mentioned multiple times is like the, you know, with jiu-jitsu and wrestling, it's you're going against an actively resisting opponent, and like you get used to that and comfortable in that chaos, and like and obviously being on the street, it's even more dangerous because there's other, you know, other factors. There's, you know, weapons, there's, you know, you're not fighting on a mat, like there's all these things. And like, oh gosh, I can't even, it's crazy to me that there's not more willingness to.
I mean, Grand Rapids is another great example. I think Minnesota, Grand Rapids.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
Or Michigan.
Michigan.
Yeah. They adopted EFC curriculum entirely recently, and they're compiling huge analyses on this. And they've seen huge change. We have body-worn camera. We EFC body-worn camera of incidents of where they're actually, you see officers using the methodology directly and it being effective. Like, so, I mean, that's on the street, tested, proven. And like, you got guys, it's not just like, hey, we're role playing and this is a sparring session, like proven, street tested at the highest level methodology. So Grand Rapids is another great example. I mean, there's some, dude, but it ultimately comes down to, like I was saying, it's chain of command. You got these old, just like all things, you get old people, you know, that have been doing it the way they've always been doing it. And it's just change requires new open minded people that are usually younger, right? Or at least willing to try something and get beyond the liability. It's like, oh, you know, the thing you always get is, oh, what about injuries? Well, what about fucking death?
Yeah. What about that guy getting his gun taken from him, him shot right there, and then he's left on the street?
Yeah.
The amount of injuries.
The guy that painting represents. I mean, like, that's, again, that just sucks.
Easy scapegoats, man. All whatever it is to just excuse taking responsibility, making a change for the better. Whatever it is, they'll fucking say whatever and do whatever to just avoid it. It's fucking sad. But and the bigger the department, the harder, as you would imagine, like any organization, the harder it's going to be to implement and get that change because you have to go through more fucking bureaucracy.
Yeah, man. Wow. So you don't carry a taser? Why? What's your thought on a taser?
It's part just like at this point, just out of principle, right? It's a grudge. Like, I mean, I've never carried one. I wouldn't say they're worthless. Every tool, I mean, the batons are worthless. Most tools have like a place in some limited use case. I think there's a limited use case for it, right? Like where you don't necessarily want to close the distance, you know, maybe it's a guy, like I said, you know.
Yeah, I think in your video you said if the guy had like a bat or something. Or
yeah,
like he's,
you got some distance on him. You haven't closed it. He isn't aggressing you. He's passive. He's chilling in the area. You got 20 feet, you know, you could deploy. Maybe there's some limited use case there. I'm not going to say never. But generally speaking, the taser is fucking worthless and it does nothing. You know, effectiveness in terms of, like, I think
it's 60% or something.
Yeah. If you look at studies, it's anywhere between like 60, 65, maybe as high as 70. But how do they define effective too? Like, it's like at the end of the day, you got to put hands on somebody.
Right.
And the taser doesn't do that for you, man. Like sometimes it'll get some compliance. You'll get some, you know, NMI, and usually you don't even get NMI. It's just like pain compliance, which, as we know, which is why a lot of these methodologies aren't effective, is because pain compliance isn't effective, right? Like you guys
to get at the stop.
Right. You see that with strikes and batons. That's why they don't work. Like, why are we beating people half to death just to control them? I could fucking control this person within 6 seconds of, yeah, with a clinch, taking them down to the ground. Yeah.
You know, I mean, minimal to no injury, as long as they're not resisting super hard or, I mean, obviously they're, you know, throwing strikes at you or something, you know, there's obviously things that can happen, but yeah, I mean, just the average grappler could, you know, subdue, you know, any normal average human being.
Yes. And that's, I mean, so yeah, I mean, back to the question of why I don't carry a taser, it's about simplicity. I mean, for me, one, I don't train with it, which, because we don't get training and I don't have my own taser, but two, even if I did,
they don't give you a taser.
I mean, like, I don't have a take home taser that I can sit here and practice transitions. Like, you know, like, it's not something that you're trained. Like, if I'm not trained with it, I'm not using it. Right.
It's not like you can go to the shooting range with a taser and practice shooting tasers.
Yeah. Like I don't, it's another thing to have. Like, if I pull out a taser, what the fuck am I going to do with this if I have to go hands on? Like, now I have to.
Now you have, then, now it's a weapon for him to, you know, like, Yeah, you'd have to holster it, and then, yeah.
Which
then
a lot of times, I mean, we're talking about, and if you ever seen the holster on a taser, it's not like a gun, bro. The retention, like, you got to fuck with it. It's not like something I can get holstered within 2 to 3, you know, a gun I can holster within a second.
Right.
You can't do that with a taser. It's just, it's another obstacle. It's another thing to impede me and to my use of what my most effective tool is, which is my hands. And if I can't control someone with my hands, like, there's some shit that's real fucked up. Like, in which case, it's probably going to require use of forces greater than a taser anyway.
Right. So what are some, I mean, I'm sure you've had several, like, have you ever had anybody, like, any person, like, resisting so hard that it was actually a fight?
Well, define fight.
I mean, like, well, it gave you a little bit of a hard time.
No. They're just, you know, it's the longest that an actual resisting I mean, like, it's not easy to get a human, like, it's not easy to get a human's hands behind their back if they're fighting, right? Like, sure. It's if they're especially full on fighting, even if they're untrained, like, they're flailing around or they just tuck, like, in terms of an actual fight, like, I mean, I've established control, like, some sort of, like, take them down and establish a control, whether it be a rear mount or side, you know, knee on belly within seconds. Now, it might take another 10, 15, 20, sometimes 30 seconds to get their hands behind their back. Yeah. But in terms of control and mitigating their ability to do anything to me, I mean, it's been relatively easy every time. Like, these, not a single one has been trained, right? It's not, and obviously my level of training is high and I'm usually bigger and stronger than most of them too. So I have multiple characteristics that are going to aid me. But, like, no, man, there's been no real fight. The biggest resisting I would say is just, like, there's some guys that are fast as fuck out there, bro. Some little 150 pounder dudes that you go and it's like, shit, that dude is fast.
You got to chase after him.
Yeah, that would be the hard. That's always been the hard of the things harder. It's just like some guys you'll get that are fucking fast.
Just and you got to run and you're chasing after him.
You're in a shithole, right? So it's like, I'm going to, like, the amount of fences I've jumped, you know, fucking 6, 8, 10 feet. Once, you know, one time it was a fucking electric fence. And I fucking electrocuted myself to get up there to get him because he did. I was like, well, fuck, I guess I'm going too.
Fuck.
So it's like shit like that. It's just navigating the terrain, the lack of lighting, the shitty fucking maintenance. You know, it's like a jungle out in the fucking alleys of North shit, bro.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. I've almost, you know, I have impaled myself. I got a scar here. Like, I jumped a fence, you know, at the night. You can't see shit. There's no lighting. I got impaled by a fucking stick, dude, that was in the ground. Went through my fucking cheek. And it's just shit like that. Like, that's the hard part of policing an area like that.
Yeah.
Wow. Jeez.
Wow.
I'm also reckless.
Thank you for your service.
Thanks for your service.
What's the difference between verbal judo and de-escalation?
Oh, man. This is good. Yeah, so people think of de-escalation as simply a verbal methodology, and that's not true. So verbal judo is specific, you know, slang that's referencing the ability to use verbiage, words, communication to de-escalate. The goal is to de-escalate a situation, that being getting compliance of a subject without having to use force. De-escalation is a broader concept, right? People think of the two as synonymous, but de-escalation is broader. Use of force, physical use of force, is integrated within de-escalation. So my ability to de-escalate a situation is oftentimes reliant upon my ability to use force, whereas verbal judo is not. So the focus here should be on de-escalation, not verbal judo. It should be on de-escalation because ultimately there's some situations that use of force are necessary and inevitable, right? So, and more importantly, if you don't have the ability to use force, you're not a police officer, right? Because you're just pleading for compliance as opposed to enforcing law. And at the end of the day, this isn't me saying or encouraging just like fucking beat people up and put their hands behind their back. But if I have an aggressive subject who poses a threat to me, sometimes you get it in that threat immediately. And that is going to de-escalate a situation for me. It's going to prevent me from possibly using a greater level of force if I allow that situation to continue. That's the key there with de-escalation, using force, right? If I see a guy that's armed, who's aggressive, who's approaching me, who, you know, maybe have just committed a violent crime, I'm not waiting to use verbal judo on this guy. Like, I might try to give verbal commands at first, if possible, if time allows. But if a guy has a gun in his hand, or I see a gun and he's armed, I'm getting to him quickly. I'm closing the distance and I'm controlling him and that firearm. I'm not waiting. And, you know, oh, that makes you a bully. That makes you overly aggressive. No, it's
protecting
myself and him. And because him. Guess what? The longer I wait to give him more time to figure out what he's going to do, maybe shoot me or pull that gun. Now what? Now I might have to shoot that guy. So that's why using force at times is often de-escalation that you wouldn't otherwise even be able to articulate, because you don't know what could have happened. And we see, now we do see this, right? We see real life situations where cops don't use force immediately and quickly, and it results in deadly situations where it results in shootings. So, hey man, do you want to be dead or do you want me to grapple you to the ground? I mean, and it's not always that black and white, but that's, but a lot of times that's, you gotta approach the situation worst case. And the good thing about grappling is I don't have to beat someone up or fuck them up right. to control them. Right. So it's not like no harm, no foul, man. Like, hey, you got to scrape the knee.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Scrape your knee.
Nobody's dead.
You know, it's the worst thing that happened. You know, maybe when you took him down, you know, he hits his knee on something, his elbow on something, you know, but that's like the worst case scenario. It's a lot better than a bullet in his chest.
Yep.
How many, when you're out on patrol, how often is something like this happening where it's getting to the de-escalation and things like that?
How often am I using your de-escalation and use of force? De-escalation is daily, every day. I mean, I work in North City. We've declined the last 2 years in murder rate and violent crime, but we were 4 or 5 years in a row the deadliest city per murder rate per capita in the world or in the country. I mean, I've used hundreds of times. I've been in use of force situations many, many times, multiple times a week. Sometimes I've had three in a day. I mean, which is, I'm a little fucking, you know, I'm out there. I'm proactive. So, which is what everyone should be, I feel right. like.
Yeah,
but
of course.
That's not necessarily typical. But if you're out there doing real police work and you're not afraid of the pushback that you'll get from chain of command or from society and how and when and how you use force, if you're using it appropriately and when it should be done, it's going to be used not infrequently in a situation in an area like that. So I've used it frequently, man, but I've used a strike one time out of probably hundreds of use of force situations. I've used one strike. It was an elbow and it was a soft like forearm elbow. Just because the situation is pretty complex, but other than that, never thrown a strike. And, I've had one guy that's had an injury out of hundreds. Wow. So, and this is with pretty old people, rate. Young people, big, young, I mean, all demographics. So it's like, hey man, shit, it's fucking proven. Like at some point you just look at the data, look at the results.
So would you say like the average cop, you know, uses a lot more than one strike? Like, you know, that would like, you're probably, I mean, as of most police officers, would you say that most of them, is that like the first thing that they're going to go to do other than?
Yeah, I think you get two kind of cops. You get guys that either freeze up and do nothing, you know, like, or they don't know what to do and they just throw strikes. And it's just strike after strike. Like I had two guys on my department, on my squad. They got into resisting with this fucking huge dude. He was 6'4", probably 280, 300. He was high on PCP, which is like essentially numbs all of your senses, right? PCP is probably the worst drug that you could be on for resistant because you can't feel shit. And dude, I showed up right after the boys, I was like one of the last ones to get there. So he was already in cuffs at that point. There's like 14, you know, whole fucking districts there. But dude, he had multiple fractures, beat to hell, all sorts of bloodied up. Cuts everywhere because they were just strike after strike because they couldn't control this guy and he kept fighting. I mean, the strikes were justified. Don't get me wrong. I'm not here to say that what they did was wrong. Given the situation with what they had at the time, that's all they could do because they didn't know how to grapple and how to control. But in order to get this big dude that was high on PCP, man, they just literally beat this fucking dude up bad. And it's like, yeah, was it justified? Yeah, but was it necessary? I mean, if you were well-trained, I could have,
you could have taken him down
within seconds, man. Like, it's just, you got to look at it like, that's how you got to look at it. You can't look at it as like, yeah, well, it was justified. It was legal. Okay, sure. But that doesn't mean it has to be that way. And then it's stuff like that that gets us a bad name because it's like, oh, this guy was high. He was mentally ill, blah, 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 blah. You guys didn't have to. Well, how about you fucking train these police officers and hire people to a standard and this shit won't happen?
And you think that they, I mean, obviously, you want to have the numbers, you want to have the people there, but do you think it'd be better for them to cut jobs and only hire the people that meet those standards and have a smaller police force? Or I mean, obviously what we have now is kind of dangerous from where we're at. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
If it were up to me, dude, quality over quantity every fucking day of the week. It's also the way the way that logistically the department will handle calls. Like, hey, if we know we have, they just send whoever, like on whatever call, right? Just who's available. Closest, like we could do this strategically as supervisor. If we really wanted to approach situations like, hey, if we have five guys, like on my squad, my buddy Garcia, I don't know if you know him, blue belt at Revive, yeah. Layman blue belt at a Gracie gym out in O'Fallon. We got a couple fucking solid dudes on my squad. It's like, hey, if we know we got some solid dudes, how about these violent calls or these violent areas where you know shit's going down, that send the boys that can handle this. And then, you know, maybe these other cops, like, hey, we get accidents, you know, all the other bullshit calls that aren't necessarily violent in nature that may require police presence. How about we send these people to do the, I mean, honestly, that's right. How I would look at it, but that's just not, I mean, talk about lawsuit, bro. Like you'd be up to your fucking neck with litigation from these fucking cops that are being, you know, persecuted and being targeted because they're, you know, females or they're black or whatever the bullshit reason they would make up because of why they're not getting these other calls. You know what I mean? It would just, that's the reason why the department doesn't do that. But if we're up to me, yeah, I would have less cops. But even then, if we're not going to change the amount of cops, just like change the way that you're deploying which cop where based on the situation is how I would. I'm not going to send, why am I sending two untrained 130-pound, I mean, if I'm just being honest, 230-pound, you know, cops to handle this fucking guy that's the caller just said he's 6'3", fucking 300 pounds. Like, that shit doesn't make sense. What are we doing?
So, obviously, cops should be fitter and they should train. So, should they train bodybuilding?
That was a funny video.
Fuck no. Yeah. Fuck no. Yeah, dude, as you would imagine, I have disdain for bodybuilding. And that's just like, regardless of police, it's just like, if you want to be a bodybuilder because you want to look, you know, fucking jacked.
It's not functional.
It's your thing, bro. Yeah, but if you want to be a capable human and you have, and your job requires you to be capable and fit and have efficient metabolic energy systems and have mobility and have just the ability to function optimally, bodybuilding is worthless. It's fucking worthless. Like, yeah, if I was like 400 pounds, like Ronnie Coleman, okay, maybe like you could argue that who's going to like be able to hurt Ronnie. Sure. But Ronnie's also not chasing after anyone.
He's definitely not running.
Is Ronnie not hopping
over that 10-foot electric fence?
You got to get to me first, bro. Yeah. Like, I mean, come on. There's like, it's a, you know, bell-shaped curve here. There's people that you want, you know, we don't want outliers in either side. We want people that are moderately high trained people within all facets of fitness to be police, not fucking excessively large, you know, muscled up dudes. That's just not, come on, man. Like, and that goes back to your SWAT operator guy. You know, that's the boys at SWAT, man. They're out there pumping. They're chasing the pump. Yeah. They're not chasing fitness.
The pump.
Well, that's the thing. When I was still playing baseball, when I was training, we did a lot of powerlifting and things like that. Most of the guys that were there were police officers. Nick White was one of them.
Where was this at?
This was down in Dog. This was a place down in Dogtown.
Powerlifting gym.
Yeah, I forget what the name of it was. But that was with Bill McDonough.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And his group.
Yeah, I don't remember what the gym was called. I never went there.
I can't remember either.
They came to us in high school.
Yeah, I mean, lifting heavy weight's cool, man. Let's do it. Like, I'm all for it. I lift heavy weight. But it's like, dude, if you don't have base levels of cardiovascular fitness, what are you doing? I don't need a 600-pound deadlift. Give me, like, a 400-pound deadlift and give me a fucking 6-minute mile, and we're fucking set, dude.
Yeah.
Like, even a 7-minute mile. Shit, at this rate, I mean, you're chasing after people... Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying we don't need elite athletes. We just need above average humans. I mean, ideally we want elite people, but above average humans would do too.
Yeah. Let's just start there. Yeah. Wow. Dude. So would you say like CrossFit or something like that would be the best if you could pick, a cop to train somewhere? Like,
yeah, I mean, what?
I know you've got some issues with CrossFit.
Yeah. Right? CrossFit methodology. Like when you say CrossFit, do we mean like, I think CrossFit at its truest form? Yes. The methodology of training, you know, in multiple domains through multiple implements, at varying intensities. Yes. I agree with that. Now, does that mean I would want a cop to go to a CrossFit gym? Well, not all CrossFit gyms, as you would know, right? It comes down to the facility and the people training you. Like, they're not necessarily that applicable or that advantageous for cops, right? Like, a lot of the workouts are fucking 4 to 6 minutes. A lot of it's a waste, long warm up, long cool down, and they're doing shit like, I don't need a cop to fucking power snatch or to fucking, you know, do ring muscle ups. Now, would it be ideal for them to have some level of competency within those things? Yes, because you're going to gain body awareness, but we can do that through other things too. So my point is that a lot of times CrossFit gyms get too nitty and gritty in the details of training specifically for CrossFit, as opposed to something that could be probably more, you know, general physical preparedness that's CrossFit based, but not so CrossFitty.
Yeah.
So yes and no would be my answer to that. It would be something that resembles CrossFit at its foundation, but not as specific as CrossFit, because it's a lot of skill involved in CrossFit too, that they don't, cops don't need, but yeah, waste of time.
So what kind of training is it that you're doing
right now? Well, I tore my fucking shoulder, but I had just had surgery.
How'd you do that?
I was grappling, but really it's just, you know,
years of,
yeah,
probably straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah. It's just
kind of thing.
A lot of, you know, a decade worth of high level training.
Yeah.
Lots of training. But yeah, I'm getting back into training for probably the CrossFit Games season next year, but in the meantime, I'm doing like a foundation based, like a GPP program where it's just like basic squat, you know, basic squat. When I can, I'll start pressing, deadlifting. So it's just, I'm going through basic powerlifting movements, basic strength movements, and then base level fitness and, you know, aerobic, anaerobic energy systems through biking, skiing, running, when I can, swimming, et cetera. You know, I'll do, you know, anaerobic work, short intervals, you know, and then longer steady state. It's just a broad domain of all energy systems, time domains, and implements. Nothing super high skilled right now. If I'm going to start competing in CrossFit, I'll probably start, you know, that's sort of my base. As I get closer to the season, I'll start bringing in more skilled CrossFit specific things like, you know, gymnastics, Olympic lifting, et cetera.
Well, I mean, I did you programmed workouts for me probably about a year and a half ago now. And that was one of the best shapes I've ever been in, honestly, like cardiovascularly. I mean, the shit you had me doing was insane. Like the 10,000 meter row, just to figure out what my baseline was fucking, yeah. Dude, my ass was numb from sitting on that rower.
Yeah, that was a little aggressive, but I mean, hey, you were training for grappling match. So
for sure. No, it was, I mean, yeah. So you have a coaching program, Green Line Fitness. How long have you been doing that?
Yeah. It's, I actually started as a law enforcement program. A couple
and you were
years
doing it
ago.
For free, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a donation-based law enforcement program. Now I'm just doing some one-on-one coaching, but I'm probably going to be merging into EFT fully here soon. So right now I'm just doing one-on-one program of my own outside of EFT, but hopefully I'll transition full with them here shortly, and that'll probably be the end of it.
Nice. So, I mean, obviously you've competed a ton in grappling, jiu-jitsu. I mean, you're a world champion, Pan Am champion. Do you have any plans on like competing anytime soon? Obviously you're recovering from a shoulder surgery, so probably not anytime very soon, but in the near future, is that something, is that a goal? Black belt, world champion? Is that like cause you won at brown belt, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The brown was masters, but purple was adult. Yeah, dude, I got to come back. Can't go out like that. So I'm coming back for sure. The plan is, for sure, no gi worlds. I'll do adult.
That's not October.
I think December.
December.
Okay. And then that's for sure. Hopefully too, gi worlds too, which is like August, I think. So for sure, no gi worlds. But I'll be back this year.
Sweet, awesome. What's like a week of training look like for you?
Fuck, dude. It varies depending on the season I'm training in. So like, or what I'm training for, right? So like, if I have a, you know, I'm usually competing in CrossFit and jiu-jitsu at the same time, as well as like tactical games, like type shit, which is shooting mixed in with like CrossFit stuff. So it varies, man, but I'll train time wise 2 to 4 or 5 hours a day. Depending, you know, work days, it's like 2-3 non work days. I'll do 2-3 sessions. So it's like 4 to 6 hours maybe on non work days, but I'll do, you know, grappling in season 3 to 5 times a week, you know, maybe more. I'll ramp it up if I'm getting up close to worlds or something. And then CrossFit, you know, when I'm in season for CrossFit, I'll back off grappling. But either way, you're, you know, total work, multiple hours a day, 6 days a week. I'll usually take one day that's a rest day, and then one day that's like a steady state, low impact, low heart rate, you know, less intensity day. So 5 hard days, you know, 1 easy day, 1 rest day.
So you're about to be a dad, man. Let's talk about that. How are you feeling about that? Baby girl, right?
Yeah.
When's the due date?
It's June 11th.
Okay. Oh,
damn, my son was born on the 6th. So
June 6th? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Nice, man.
Yeah. So nervous? How are you feeling about it?
It's still not real to me.
Dude, it's not until, not until she's here, man. I always felt the same way. I was like, it didn't feel real until you're holding her and you're like, holy shit, like I have a baby now. Like, at least that's how I felt, you know, because everybody says, like, are you ready? Are you ready? You're ready. You're like, no, I'm not. I mean,
nothing
like,
prepares you for it.
Yeah. I mean, you can read all the books in the world, but like, I felt like nothing really made sense to me until you actually had the baby. Like, they're here, you know?
That's where I'm at. Yeah. Mentally, I agree. It's crazy to think.
Yeah. Cause like, I mean, you know, the woman, she's so connected to that baby because growing inside her. But then, like, us as the guys, like, it just, you know, it's real. Obviously, you can see the baby. I mean, you can see her belly growing. You can feel the baby kicking. But like, it's not really real, or not. It's not. Doesn't feel very real until like they're here. It's very eye opening. I'm excited for you to experience that.
Me too.
I think. Yeah. No, you're gonna do great, man. It's I mean, if someone is driven and as hardworking as you, you're gonna take all these amazing characteristics that you have, and you're going to apply them to being a dad. Sure.
It's a goal, man. It's a goal. Yeah. Not raising a weak person, right?
No. So are you going to, make her train jujitsu?
Yeah. I don't know if I'd say make, but
like, are you
going to, I definitely am going to, yeah, I probably will make at first. I'll be like, all right, we got to at least do this thing.
Got to have a baseline.
Yeah.
Now I will protect yourself kind of thing.
It wouldn't be like, okay, you have to do this forever, but it's like, you got to do it. I do think, yeah, at some level, not as a sport, but yeah, I think as a foundational, you know, measure for just being a prepared human, I think that there is some level of like mandatory training that should be necessary. Yeah, it's definitely happening.
Yeah,
she's gonna hopefully be a wrestler. I would NCAA man's taking girls
dude,
now.
It is.
So
it is. Yeah,
we got 20 years, but 18. But
yeah,
that would be cool. It's
plenty of time. Get her ready.
Yeah.
What age do you recommend getting into wrestling and then jujitsu and?
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm by any means an expert on that. But I just like, anecdotally speaking, you see it both ways. We get kids in too early and they just fucking get burnt out, man. But I think largely it's the way that you're doing it. Like the kids that you see get burnt out that start young, the parents are usually, because for the same reason why they're starting them young is the same reason how they're interacting with them probably too aggressively. I think it comes down to like, yeah, get them started 4 or 5 probably. But it's like, dude, let's go like twice a week, you know, like, this whole 5 days a week where you're training to be a fucking world champion, it's probably like, we don't need that.
Yeah, they're going to be burnt out by the time they're 10.
Yeah, so I think it's key to start them young, but not be so fucking rigid and aggressive with how you're implementing the training. Like, it can't be so training-based as it is just like, let's expose them to this world that could be fucking beneficial for them and their growth.
Yeah, I was told something once that, you know, as parents, we can't make our kids love something, but we can make our kids hate something.
That's absolutely
so, yeah. Like, you know, like, we can't make them fall in love with wrestling and jujitsu, but you know, as much as I want that, we can't force it. They have to love it themselves for absolutely. Them to, you know, want to do it every day.
And I think a lot of that's just the pressure when you see them, like the pressure to compete, the pressure to perform. That's the big thing too. It's like, dude, like, who gives a fuck if your boy 9 years old won state, dude? That shit doesn't fucking matter.
No.
I mean, that's where it really gets dicey.
That's something for you to go brag about to your buddies, not for the kid.
Yeah.
Well, that's what's crazy. So, like, I was in pro ball. Guys, you know, I'm playing against guys that I played with growing up, and you're like, man, I didn't think that guy was very good when we were growing up, or like went through high school, and then all of a sudden he flips a switch in college, and it's a completely different baseball player. So, I mean, everybody changes, or everybody comes through or matures at a different age or a different time where it finally clicks for them. So it's just like, it drives me nuts when I see kids and parents pushing for kids like, oh my God, he needs to be on this team at this age. And by then, and then I'm like, shut the fuck up. No, he don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. The goal is the end. I mean, if the goal is the end result, who cares how you get there anyway?
Right. When did you get into wrestling? How old were you?
I was 11 when I started. My dad wrestled. He was my coach at first. 11. I actually quit for 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, I quit. And then, he died actually, and I started back up right after he died, and it kind of helped me, like, all right, let's do this thing. But yeah, I quit 2 years, man. That could have been the end. It could have been the end of what I, you know, maybe would have never grappled, et cetera. Who knows what would have happened, but started back up, man, on my own. And here we are.
Where'd you end up going to college?
Lindenwood. I went to Lindenwood Belleville and then actually transferred to Lindenwood, St. Charles.
And you were an NCAA champion, right?
We were transitionary. We're in AIA my first year transitioning to D2. We didn't get to wrestle in D2 nationals because I competed in conferences, but not nationals because we were transition period. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
Where'd you go to high school? Did you wrestle in high school, obviously? I'm assuming. Yeah. Like, if you wrestled in college, duh. That was it. But where'd you go to high school?
Francis Howell Central. Okay. Yeah.
Good wrestling program there.
Yeah, dude. It was we were undefeated 6 years. I mean, our team in state was top four, like most of those years. So we had my year, senior year, we were second in state as a team. We had a stacked team, dude.
Man, so you've competed at the highest level on and like so many different things, jiu-jitsu, CrossFit. Like, what would you say is like, what was like the biggest challenge for you, you think?
The biggest challenge amongst all of those things I've competed in, like competitive wise? Wrestling, man. Really? I mean, nothing harder than wrestling. I fought amateurly for a while. That was.
You did? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I fought amateurly. I was like 18 when I was wrestling. I was doing amateurly on the side. Yeah. But even that, nah, dude, it was wrestling, dude. Really? Wrestling is just fucking grueling, man. It's a lot of it's just we do it to ourselves, you know, the weight cut and all that. But there's just, I wasn't cutting weight when I was fighting. I was like, fuck that.
What'd you fight at?
185. That's a lot smaller, man.
I was gonna say, what are you now, 230?
Yeah. Yeah. wrestling, man. Wrestling is the hardest fucking thing, at least what I've ever come by.
Makes sense. Looking back on it, I mean, like the culture within wrestling and jiu-jitsu are very different.
Yeah, dude. So, it's crazy how soft jits guys are, dude. Like, I get, like, some wrestling is, like, a little excessive, but, like, we could have, like, a nice meet in the middle here. Like, these jits guys, some of these gyms, it's like, you do a takedown, it's like, fucking, you know, the worst thing on planet Earth. Like, oh, my God, that was so aggressive. Hey, guys, we grapple.
Isn't that what we're supposed to do?
Yeah, we grapple now.
Well, it's like the guys that just immediately sit to their butt. Oh, it's obviously not your game.
Yeah, nobody wants to get fucking blast doubled across the room, bro. Back feet to back, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, that's of course.
Yeah, it was like the very first time I went up to the fundamentals one in the morning.
Yeah,
and I forget who it was, but Trevor's like, no, don't you take show him what's up. And he's told the first guy I went against had me in an arm bar within 10 seconds. I go to we're standing up grappling, and I go to grab him like that, and he immediately whips his legs up around me and has me in an arm bar. Yeah. I was like, fuck,
gee.
Yeah,
the gi's fucked, dude.
You don't like the gi?
No, I mean, I've come to like the gi, but I just mean, like, if you're new, it's like shit you can do with the gi is fucking
trapped. Yeah. I mean, you're just, and you can set up a lot of, I mean, there's, especially if someone who's never trained in the gi, it's a big disadvantage just because you're not used to someone grabbing your clothes and fucking choking you with them.
Yeah, you can be little, and it's definitely more geared towards
smaller people.
Yeah, leverage, and you can obviously utilize grip, so overcome the big guys with some fucked up weird shit. Yeah.
I mean, now, I guess, in, like, police work, have you ever, like, I guess it wouldn't make much sense that you're just you're doing all no-gi grips, you're not grabbing clothes or anything.
Yeah, dude, I'm trying to think if I've ever done, if I have, it hasn't been, like, sometimes I don't even know what, sometimes, you know, with being trained, you're just fucking reacting without even knowing what you're doing, but if I have not, I mean, I would say the majority of my techniques are all going to be no-gi based, because I don't want to rely. Also, too, just I wouldn't rely on the clothing or.
Right. It's not, you know, it could rip or.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. It'd be weird. Like, there could be some grips I think that could be useful, but I'm not going to rely on that as a method of control out on the street, man. Yeah. It's like, this guy's not wearing a 6-pound robe. So. Yeah.
I mean, 6-pound robe. Yeah. They are that heavy, aren't they?
You could imagine the backlash, too, on fucking seeing like a video of a cop, like, fucking
cross collar choking.
Yeah. Or well, that would be crazy choking, but just like, you know, manhandling a dude with his own fucking coat would just be like, oh, the worst thing ever.
And what if you like judo throw, you know, some guy's got like a leather jacket on and it gets like a judo throw or something.
That would be fucking sweet to see. That would be fucking sweet. In fact, you might have to have someone do that just to have a video of it.
Oh, for sure. That'd be awesome.
But yeah, there'd be fucking riots, dude. It'd be, that's misuse of force.
Yeah. I mean, how much of that kind of stuff have you dealt with, like, the misuse of force stuff? Is that something you've run into?
Like, rioting and shit?
No, or, like, just, like, you know, have you had anybody, like, complain, you know, that...
On me?
Yeah.
Oh, dude. Yeah, actually, yeah. The biggest one that comes to mind, I had a guy go to... So, we have this new oversight, like, commit... I say new, it's been a couple of years, like, civilian oversight board. So, there's literally a fucking group of random people that are just in the community that have created a board. I don't know if there's any vetting, probably not. And they get to oversee any complaint by a citizen on a police officer. They have no fucking training in anything that's relevant to police or use of force. And as you can imagine, the people of the city of our great St. Louis.
The people that are applying to be right. This are going to be, you know, not people that are probably in
upstanding
favor
citizens that are fucking
in
you know
favor of a police doing right. what they should be.
They're not objective fucking bystanders. But regardless, you get a complaint, you go to the civilian oversight board, and to my understanding, it's mandated that they look into it. So I had a guy complain saying I choked him. And there's body worn camera of the whole incident. It was a guy that like fled from us in a car. We caught him parked outside of a fucking liquor store. We hopped out on him when he fucking came out, and he went to run. He was running down this handicap ramp, and I come running out of my car and stiff armed him into the fucking wall. He's resisting, you know, stiff armed to the wall. Cause obviously goal one is to like get him to stop his movement. And I need something to do that. The wall's the fucking most easily accessible thing. Stiff armor into the wall, you know, because like a takedown at that point wasn't very.
Yeah, you don't want to take him down into the
wall.
I got
a blast double into the fucking brick wall. But anyway, there's video of me, and he said that I choked him. And the whole video shows me the entire time with my hand like on his fucking chest, like the pecs right here above like the top of the chest, nowhere near his fucking neck. So it went to the oversight board, then it went to the fucking IED, Internal Affairs. They looked at all the body camera. And they still opened an investigation, called me down for an interview, and interrogated me regarding this alleged claim of choking. I'm like, hey, guys, I know you checked the body camera. It was my hand on him. And the camera have you the entire time, the angle showed me nowhere on his neck at any point. And they still went out of their way to investigate this. First of all, this is like a waste of fucking resources. What do we do? Right. Second of all, why are we encouraging people to make false claims that are clearly unsubstantiated? But yeah, shit like that happens all the time. You know, I've had people accuse me of stealing money, dope and shit. It's just bullshit. Really? You know what I mean? Just fucking anything. Like when you arrest someone, it's like, oh, he stole my money and dope and shit. It's like, bro, you got caught. Like, it's cool. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure there's cops out there that have stolen dope and money. I mean, they have
been arrested, for sure.
But, you get lots of complaints, man, especially if you're making arrests and you're proactive, lots of complaints.
Is there like, how do you deal with that? Is it just, you just kind of like state your case or like.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, like, the people in charge would handle it better, like, but assuming that doesn't happen and it's just on me, yeah, when you get interrogated, you get an interview, it's just, yeah, it's obvious. I mean, state the facts, and I'll just try and let Reddit brush over me as, you know, as much as I can, but.
It's just crazy to be in a job where the people call you to help them, but they hate you because you're, you know, even while you're helping them, you know, it's just insane.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the times this is like proactive work. I'm out there, you know, looking for the guys with guns, dope, fucking killing people, you know, fucking committing the crimes. But yeah, I mean, that too, it's, you'll get people to call you. A lot of it's domestic, you know, like got girls getting beat up and then they're, you know, the guy gets arrested or whatever, police action's taken. And then it's like the next day, oh, I don't want to prosecute, you know, or. He's back over at the house the next day because they let him out because we don't, you know, hold people in the city of St. Louis, or at least we used to not. There are prosecutors better now. But yeah, man, it's a knee jerk reaction, right? They call the police, knee jerk reaction, and then
regret it or whatever.
They just want you to be their bully when they want you, and then they want you to go away when they don't.
Yeah. Be their punching bag when they got something to complain about. Sucks.
That sucks.
Could imagine having to deal with that.
Yeah, it doesn't make your job any easier, that's for sure.
Yeah, I feel like it doesn't bother me too. I mean, when you're actually doing it, it's not as, I mean, it I feel like it's way worse looking from the outside in than actually when you get to doing it. It's just like, yeah,
I mean, mentally, like, what kind of toll does that have on people? I'm sure that, I mean, I'm not you even gotta be pretty mentally tough to do what you do.
I guess, man. I mean, yeah, like, I think I quit once. I quit, you know, for a year, and that's when I was engineering. I quit, went to engineering for that reason. Like, it's just, at some point it's a lot to fucking deal with, but you're just like, what, it makes you wonder, like, why are you doing this shit? You know, like, what's the purpose? Like, why am I killing myself, my sleep, my training? Like, I could have all things, I could be making more money. And, you know, for me, it was training and sleep. It's like, why am I killing myself for this bullshit? And you get to thinking, I don't think it's, people are aware. And I don't think you're aware as a police officer when you're, you know, day to day, you're week to week, how much toll it takes on you. And I think I realized that when I was like 4 years in and I looked back, I was like, dude, I'm not the same fucking person, you know? And I think that's the most insightful feedback that I had on myself, was looking back, thinking of myself as a human I was at 24, 25 going in, and then how I am now. And that makes you realize, yeah, this definitely takes a fucking toll because, you know, I've changed, like, and not necessarily for the better in some ways. And that's where I try to have sympathy on cops, because, like, man, I like to consider myself highly trained and able to, you know, handle situations, but it's like, dude, if this shit can, it can affect anyone, dude. And it fucks up anyone. It just, it's a lot of fucking stress that you wouldn't necessarily like in the moment. It's like, oh, it's not a big deal, blah, 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 blah. You go on. But like I said, you look back and you look at the whole picture and you realize that it compounds and it doesn't matter who you are or what you do. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of how bad does it get and what do you do about it?
So you quit at one point. What brought you back?
I think what it brings everyone back. What brought me initially, you know, just the thrill, man, you know, the fucking desire, like, yeah, I want to help. That's definitely a motive. And that's initially what drove me too. Like I have skills that I thought that I could be useful to policing. I was like, you know, I don't want to work at a fucking desk job. I thought I was useful. I was like, I could be a good fit. And also I want to have fun, but I want to do the right thing too. You know, I want to be able to express, you know, be able to have all these domains in life at one specific job, which like policing could be fucking it, you know, being able to express your skills and have an impact and maybe influence people to want to go train and be better cops. But also I get to have some fun too. You chase at the end of the day, you know, chasing dudes with guns and like, that's fucking fun. Like, I mean, it's a thrill. And to say otherwise would just be, I'd just be lying. So I came back, man, cause I missed it. I wanted to do it. You know, I think at some point you do it for so long and it's just like, you get out and it's like, man, life's not the same. It's almost a negative thing at times. Cause it's like, man, am I addicted to this? Do I need it? It definitely makes you wonder, like, are you doing it? Sometimes it makes me wonder if you're doing it for the right reasons. And that could just be self-doubt, right? Cause I definitely know I want to make a change and I care about the outcome and I want to help people. But at other times it's like, hey man, like if this is changing you for the worse and your family and like, is it really worth it? Am I really doing it for the right reasons? So yeah, I came back, man. Like I said, cause I missed it. I didn't really know what to do without it. Maybe just habit. No.
Yeah. But yeah, it makes sense. You're obviously very good at it.
Like I like to think that I'm not terrible.
Dude, Matt, this has been a great having you here, man. Was there anything you want to promote before we get out of here?
I would really like to, you know, bring awareness to EFT and EFC, especially if cops are going to be listening to this podcast. Like I said, I'm a coach for EFT, online fitness programming, effective fitness training. We have memberships, you know, for cops. It's online. It's like $35 a month, man. It's awesome fucking programming. I'm programming for them. And then we do effective fitness combatives. We're holding seminars. It's coming to St. Louis, March 17th. So any cops out there that want to get some training, I'll be instructing there as an assistant with our lead. And it's going to be fucking awesome. So hit us up regarding EFT, EFC, if you got any questions.
Awesome. That's awesome. Where can people follow you at?
Instagram, manonamission.foryou is probably the best way to get a hold of me, guys.
Sweet.
Well, we'd like to hit you with one last question before we let you go, kind of catch you by surprise. Here lies Matt. What's it say on your tombstone?
Here lies Matt. That was up to me. Probably, and it's deep. Somebody that gave a fuck, maybe.
Yeah. Go fucking train.
You know what? I like that one. Go fucking train. Don't be a bitch.
Love it.
That would be it. Don't be a bitch.
It's perfect.
Perfect.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you guys for tuning into the show. If you haven't clicked that subscribe button for us yet, please do so. That would help us out a ton. Click that like button as well. Comment what you thought below, and we will see you next time.